Viscount's Revenge, written by Barbara Cartland, narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1877. Viscount Trent gave his splendid team their heads when they moved out of the built-up area. They were a new acquisition that he was very proud of. He was quite sure that every man who passed him was thinking how lucky he was to have such magnificent, well-matched horses. He was driving a chaise he had designed himself, in which he could travel a great deal faster than he had ever done before. The groom perched up behind him had difficulty in holding on to his cap. Today, the Viscount found himself in a particularly good mood, because he was, for the first time in his life, going to make a proposal of marriage. He had habitually avoided the London debutantes, who had regarded him every season with an eager eye, full of hope. He had also managed to keep well out of the reach of their ambitious mothers, who felt that they would surely be fortunate enough to capture him where a great number of their friends had failed. The Viscount would have been very stupid, which he was most certainly not, if he had not known that he was one of the most eligible bachelors in the whole of London society. Being exceedingly handsome, it was not surprising that every matrimonial trap was laid out carefully to catch him. His father, the Earl of Trentonson, was known to be one of the richest men in England. His huge ancestral home in Oxfordshire was noted for one of the finest collections of paintings, furniture, and china of any other house in the whole country. The Viscount himself was an exceptionally bright young man, who had come away from Oxford University with the highest degrees possible, as suitable awards for his exceptional intellect. He had travelled a great deal. Not only had he been welcomed by the ruler of every country he visited, but had brought back information for which he was congratulated by the Prime Minister and Queen Victoria. At the same time, it was most surprising that he had managed to avoid the ties of marriage. Finally, he had last decided that he would take a wife and produce, which was absolutely essential, an heir for his illustrious family. He had now found that the acclaimed beauty of the season was even more attractive than she was proclaimed to be. In fact, he believed that no one else could grace the family tiara and all the other jewellery as well as Marigold Marlowe. She came from an ancient country family. It had a family tree almost as long as the Viscount's own. The only title in it had been given to Marigold's father, Lord Marlowe, for the way that he had assisted the cabinet in extending the British Empire even further than it was already. Marigold Marlowe had astounded the social world from the first moment she appeared as a debutante at the age of 16. That she was indeed one of the great beauties went without saying. A number of other debutantes had perfect peaches and cream complexions, but Marigold managed to assert herself by being exceedingly amusing. Young men who often found the average debutante somewhat heavy on hand found themselves laughing and enjoying every word of her wit. She was unusually witty at the expense of others. Equally, it was unusual to have a debutante who could assert herself and who was not shy of anyone she had to meet. Actually, Marigold was christened just Mary, after her mother, who had died 10 years ago after a long and debilitating illness. But she had thought, if she was to be a sensation in the social world, Mary sounded too dull. She therefore, before she made her appearance, rechristened herself Marigold. She knew that the name itself would be unusual and cause people to notice her, and she was, in fact, determined to be noticed. She had managed to do so.